Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part of Faculty of Social Science. Now, we are going to record the next poet of our syllabus, William Wordsworth. First of all, the introduction about William Wordsworth. William Wordsworth was one of the greatest English poets and had an exceptional influence on the development of English literature. He mastered all the major verse forms. He is called the high priest and worshipper of nature by the most celebrated critics of the 18th and 19th century. His poems show not only the love of nature but also a feeling of respect and reverence for her. In his famous preface of the Lyrical Ballads, which he published with his friend Coleridge, Wordsworth explained that his object is to write poetry which will appeal to the ordinary reader. It is no doubt a landmark in the world of English literature. His life history and his works. William Wordsworth was born in 1770 at Cockermouth, Cumberland, and spent much of his boyhood among the common people of the natural surroundings. He came here in contact with the rugged and rough type of people who were untouched with corrupt civilization. He was educated at Hawkesshed School, Lancashire, and then again at Cambridge. In 1802, he married Mary Hitchinson. Then, along with his wife and loving sister Dorothy, he settled in the Lake District, which is very much related with the Wordsworth works. He visited France twice and was much impressed by the French Revolution. After the death of Robert Sude in 1843, he was placed as great poet laureate. He died in 1815. So far as his works are concerned, he wrote many poems, among which there are some important works: An Evening Walk, Descriptive Sketches, Lyrical Ballads, Tin Turn Away, The Prelude, The Recluse, The Excursion, Mitchell, The Rainbow, The Solitary, Reappear, Lucy, etc. Now, what is the Romantic Revival or characteristics of Romanticism? English Romanticism is no doubt a great revolution against 18th century traditions and conventions. It is also a revival of ancient meters and ancient masters of poetry. Before it we describe the characteristics of Romanticism, it is very necessary to define what is Romanticism means. According to Pater, Romanticism is an addition of strangeness or to beauty. Walt Dunton defines it as the renaissance of wonder. Lugas and Casimir says about Romanticism an accentuated predominance of emotional life provoked and directed by the exercise of imaginative vision. Thus, we came to a conclusion that Romanticism is a wonder. There is beauty, there is goodness, there is liberty. It has some new epoch in the history of English poetry. There are some important features of Romanticism. First, subjectivity. All romantic literature is more or less subjective. It is because that all the poems come out of the soul of the artist. The poet does not care for rules and regulations, but gives the expression to his emotions. The poet writes according to his own fancy. So there is a lot of varieties in romantic poetry. Second, spontaneity. Romantic poetry is a spontaneous overflow of powerful feelings, and the romantic poet is gifted with a strong organic sensibility. To the romantic poets, Poetry is not a craft but inspiration. By this idea, sometimes we find that their poetry is very much clumsy and full of obscurity. Third, love of nature. All the romantic poets more or less have a great love of nature. Wordsworth is the leader of this characteristic. The romantic poets carry us away from the suffocating atmosphere of cities into the freshness of the outdoor world. They not only sing of the sensuous beauty of nature, but also see the heart of the things and reveal the soul that lies behind. Fourth, love of supernaturalism. The romantic poetry is extraordinary, alive to the wonder, mystery and beauty of the universe. The poet feels the presence of unseen powers in nature. The supernatural has a special charm for him. He is attracted by the stories of fairies, ghosts, and witchcraft. The great poet Coleridge is the master of supernatural world. Fifth, melancholy. A romantic poet is a dissatisfied individual. He may be dissatisfied with the circumstances of his own life, with his age, with literary conventions and traditions of the day, or with the general fate of humanity. Romantic poetry is therefore often pessimistic in tone. The great romantic Keats is the master of his quality. Sixth, nobility. The romantics have an instinct for the elemental simplicities of life. Their hearts overflow with sympathy for the poor and the downtrodden. They glorify the innocence and simplicity of the common man. They try to understand human nature. They find the divinity in man. The romantic movement thus becomes a part of the general democratic movement. Seventh, simplicity in theme and treatment. Most of the romantic poets are very simple in their treatment. They not only write about a common thing and common man, but they also use simple language for their purpose. William Wordsworth advocates for it and brings a great revolution in using the diction, as the poets of 18th century used bombastic language. He also pleads that there is no essential difference between the language of the poetry and the language of the prose. Eighth, the rhyming form. Most of the romantic poets use different rhyming forms, unlike the 18th century poets like Pope and Johnson. They used mostly heroic couplet, but the romantic poets use the forms of the classical poets. The Spenserian stanza, ballad metre, the blank verse, lyric, the ode and the sonnet are all revived, and they soon attain wide popularity. Thus, there is no doubt that the romantic revival is a great revolution in English literature. It brings new warmth in the English poetic world. As the great leader of this school, William Wordsworth, writes, "The things which I have seen, I can see no more." This utterance is really the utterance of soul. There is something supernatural in the heart and the soul of the poets of this great school. Now, William Wordsworth as the worshipper of nature. William Wordsworth has rightly been regarded as one of the greatest poets of English poetry. As poet of nature, he stands supreme. He is a worshipper of nature, nature's devotee or high priest. His love of nature was probably truer and more tender than that of any other English poets before or after. There are mainly three points in his creed of nature. A. He conceived of nature as a living personality. He believed that there is a divine spirit pervading all the objects of nature. B. Wordsworth believed that the company of nature gives joy to the human heart, and also believed that nature had a healing influence on sorrow-stricken hearts. C. Wordsworth emphasized the moral influence of nature. He spiritualized nature and regarded her as a great moral teacher, as the best mother, guardian and nurse of man. Wordsworth believed that between man and nature there is a mutual consciousness, a spiritual communication or mystic intercourse. According to him, human beings who grow up in the lap of nature are perfect in every respect. He loves nature more than his life, as he writes in his great poem, The Rainbow. My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky, so was it when my life began, so is it now I am a man, so be it when I shall grow old or let me die. This poetry proves how much he loves the nature. He further writes, the child is father of the man, and I could wish my days to be bound each to each by natural pity. Nature as a teacher. Wordsworth made nature the teacher of man. To him, nature is a teacher whose wisdom we can learn, if we will, and without which any human life is vain and incomplete. He believed in the education of man by nature. In this, he was somewhat influenced by Rousseau. This interrelation of nature and man is very important in considering Wordsworth's view of both, as he writes himself, one impulse from a vernal wood may teach you more of man, of more evil, and of good, than all the sages can. Wordsworth warns natural love from the beginning to the end of human life, and he believes that nature can teach a man more than a sage. Wordsworth as a poet. William Wordsworth is one of the greatest poets of English literature. In his essay on Wordsworth, Matthew Arnold places him next only to Shakespeare. There is no doubt he is a great poet, one of the immortal poets of the world. As a poet, he can be studied under the following qualities. First, love of nature. Second, as a poet of man. Third, greatness as a teacher and philosopher. Fourth, the healing power of nature. Fifth, Wordsworth's optimism. Sixth, his outlook on life. Seventh, his patriotism. Eighth, Wordsworth's theory of poetry. Ninth, Wordsworth's autobiographical attitude. 10th, Wordsworth's poetic style. 11th, the figures and rhyming of Wordsworth. 12th, his greatness. 13th, his defects. 14th, his place in the English literature. Now, love of nature. Now it has been proved in the world of English literature that there is no one more truthful in the representation of nature than William Wordsworth. He gives us the very life and soul of nature. The spiritual interpretation of nature is the chief greatness and glory of Wordsworth. In this, he stands unique among English poets. As a boy, he loves nature for gaining the pleasure, as he says, "As a boy, I loved the sun." But his love of nature becomes more strong when he is young, then his love becomes sensuous. And as a full and perfect man, his love for nature is marked by an intense spiritual force. Lastly, he loves nature for music and humanity. Thus, the love of nature for Wordsworth is the soul of his life. As the poet of man, though Wordsworth has been rightly regarded as the lover of nature, yet he never forgets the value of man. In his maturity, he links nature with man. He feels that the living presence which he finds in nature exists in the mind of man too. According to him, society and the crowded, unnatural life of cities tend to weaken and prevent humanity, and a return to a natural and simple living is the only remedy for human wretchedness. He is a revolutionist in this sense. He thinks not of the princes and heroes, but of the joys of the common, and reveals an inherent grandeur and glory of their souls. The poem, like the Tintern Abbey and the Immortality Ode, are the best examples where Wordsworth presents that the man is more mystical than the nature itself. Now, greatness as a teacher and philosopher. William Wordsworth writes himself, "Every great poet is a teacher. I wish either to be considered as a teacher or as nothing." His view of life is an optimistic one, the purpose of many of his poems being to show that the keynote of all the life is happiness. He has given many moral teachings through his poems. In the Tintern Abbey, Ode to Duty, Ode on Immortality, etc., he tries to teach and postulate the morality, ethics and philosophy before the mankind. His greatest achievement as a teacher is that he can remain a great artist, uttering great moral or philosophical ideas. Now, the healing power of his poetry. Wordsworth is the only poet who will bear reading in times of distress, because his favorite lesson is the possibility of turning grief and disappointment to account. Stephen. This is because the poetry of Wordsworth is the poetry of happiness. It is pervaded all through by the deep power of joy. It is the reflection of peace that was within his own soul and which he found everywhere in nature. He brings the soothing balm, the joy that he finds at the heart of things, for the soul of an afflicted humanity groaning under the heels of the monster of materialism. Indeed, Wordsworth's poetry acts like a curative medicine on a sick mind. His poetry is calm and meditative without any fever or heat. Wordsworth's optimism. The poetry of William Wordsworth presents a great attitude of optimism. There is peace, there is pleasure, there is action everywhere. He hopes that nature can teach man better than any preacher of the word, as he writes, "Of truth, of grandeur, beauty, love and hope, and melancholy fear subdued by faith, of blessed consolations in distress." So he presents an optimistic view of life in most of his poetry. Ode to Immortality is one of the best examples of this principle. In the beginning, he represents for the lackness of love with nature, but at last he thinks that though he loses something from his life, yet he gets a far better change in the life of life to develop. His outlook on life. Wordsworth is no doubt a romantic poet, but his romanticism is not like that of Shakespeare and Byron, but there is mystery in life. As he writes in his famous sonnet, "The world is too much with us." There he describes, if one wants to lead his life happily and peacefully, he must follow nature. As he says in the poem, "The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers, little we see in nature that is ours." So the life should be spent with nature, because it is divine. There is pleasure and peace both. Wordsworth always thinks about nature. In Ode to Immortality, he explains and says that we come here from the heaven, but we never try to look at the beauty of nature, and we spoil our life only in passion. So he suggests that we should love nature. His patriotism. After the death of Robert Sude in 1843, he was placed as a poet laureate in England. He had not got this position by luck. He had ability for it. He truly deserved it. He had the patriotic feeling in him. In 1805, he lost his beloved father and the English nation lost Lord Nelson at the Battle of Trafalgar. The poet felt double grief, a great deal, and expressed in his Peel Castle and his Ode to Liberty. His sonnets on liberty are the most permanent record in English literature of Napoleonic war and are worthy of comparison with the noblest passage of patriotic verse which English history has inspired, down from Shakespeare to Brooke. Thus, the sense of patriotic feeling may be seen in his poetry too. Wordsworth's theory of poetry. Wordsworth rebelled against the poetic principles of the 18th century. He held that the common life of the poor, simple people serves as a fit material for poetry. A. That the diction to be employed in poetry should be drawn from the everyday speech of human beings, a formula with which he laid the revolt against the artificial and bombastic diction of the 18th century, new classical poetry. See, he wanted to throw a coloring of imagination over the simple material chosen for treatment in poetry. Michael, the solitary reappear, to a Highland girl, and several other poems illustrate this theory, though in some of his poems he himself is away from his own theory, yet in most of his poems he uses his poetry. He was placed at zenith for his simplicity in poetry. Autobiographical attitude. There is a strong personal and autobiographical element in the poetry of Wordsworth. According to some critics, he is the most egotistical of all poets because he makes an excessive use of pronoun. I. The most outstanding examples of his autobiographical poetry are The Prelude, Tintinnabe, The Immortality Ode, The Excursion, and Lucy poems. There is an example of autobiographical attitude in his famous poem, The Prelude. Fair seed time had my soul and I grew up, fostered alike by beauty and by fear. Tintinnabe is also an autobiographical poem. At first, nature was merely a background for his boyish scheme. As a group, he developed a love for nature. The love was purely physical and sensuous. When he attained maturity, his love for nature became intellectual and spiritual, and he heard in nature the still sad music of humanity. For example, "For I have learned to look on nature not as in the hour of thoughtless youth, but hear oftentimes the still sad music of humanity." Similarly, he represents his autobiographical attitude in the Immortality Ode, and he writes, "The things which I have seen, I can see no more." Thus, we see that most of his poems are autobiographical. Wordsworth's poetic style. William Wordsworth is very much paradoxical so far as his poetic style is concerned. As Matthew Arnold says, when he seeks to have a style, he falls into ponderosity and pomposity. On one hand, he advocates for simplicity of language. On the other hand, he himself uses a bombastic language. So his style is mostly according to the subject matter of his poems. So there is a simplicity of language, there is the ascetic style, there is the grand eloquent style, there is the rhetorical style. So the style of Wordsworth is variable. It changes from time to time. He was condemned for it. Figures and rhyming. Wordsworth is a poet of nature. So he uses mostly similes, metaphor, personification, oxymoron, and alliteration, etc. So far as rhyming of the poem is concerned, he uses various rhyming schemes. In the beginning, he uses a couplet very like Pope and Johnson. Later on, in the sonnets, he uses the classical style. But most of his great works are written in blank verse, like Ode on Immortality, The Prelude, Tintern Abbey, etc. His greatness. Wordsworth is great as a teacher and great as a poet. He is great for he opens the eyes of his readers to the loveliness of nature and their souls to her divine message. Wordsworth's poetry is great, writes Arnold, because of his extraordinary power with which Wordsworth feels the joy offered to us in nature. The joy offers to us in the simple primary affection and duties. He is really one of the chief glories of English poetry. His defects. There are many critics who point out Wordsworth's drawback. They are the following. First, inequality. Second, egotism. Third, lack of lyricism. Fourth, lack of style. Fifth, limited range of poetry. His friend and great English critic Coleridge says about the defects of Wordsworth's poetry, they are the following. A. There is inconsistency of style. B. Superfluousness. C. Drastic form. D. Prolixity. E. Bombastness. Wordsworth's place in English literature. William Wordsworth has been regarded as the greatest priest, philosopher, teacher, and preacher of nature. He is the leader of Romantic era. Matthew Arnold placed him next to Shakespeare, but so far as natural poet is concerned, he is first and sits at the zenith point. There is no other poet greater than he. Who is more a worshipper of nature? There is a sonnet of his greatness. Wordsworth loves the nature as one loves his soul, for there is a spiritual power and life. It teaches the man who to gain divine goal and tells the way how to win worldly strife. Wordsworth worships nature as one prays the Lord, for there is celestial beauty and truth. He feels there is one greatest soul of God that brings revolution in every rut. Wordsworth believes in the rustic language that has been used by the common people. He tributes ever his holy homage to achieve the soul of heaven's humble. Wordsworth finds sublime peace and joy in nature and gets true inspiration for the nature. Now, we are going to record the first poem of the William Wordsworth, Tintern Abbey. First of all, summary of the poem. In the present poem, Tintern Abbey, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his very vivid and organic idea about the beauty of nature. Here, he describes his second visit to Tintern Abbey. The poem is a statement of Wordsworth's complete philosophy of nature. The memory of the beautiful scene of nature round Tintern Abbey has been affording relief to the poet in the moments of trouble and distress. Nature has also often lightened the weight of the mystery of the universe. When he was younger, his love for nature was thoughtless, passionate, and sensuous. But now he has witnessed the sufferings of mankind and his love for nature was become spiritual. He now perceives a divine spirit in all the objects of nature. Furthermore, he looks upon nature as a mother, guardian, nurse, and moral teacher. The poem concludes with an address to his sister in which he pays a glowing tribute to her and advises her to cultivate the friendship of nature. Hindi Sarans. Prastut Kavita, Tintern Abbey, ke antargat Kavi William Wordsworth प्रकृति के सौंदर्य के बारे में अत्यंत सजीव एवं सचित्र वर्णन करता है। यहाँ वह टिंटर्न अभी की दूसरी यात्रा का वर्णन करता है। प्रस्तुत कवि वर्ड्सवर्थ के प्राकृतिक वर्णन का संपूर्ण दर्शन है। टिंटर्न अभी के निकट एक प्राकृतिक सौंदर्य उसे अच्छी तरह याद है और यह प्राकृतिक सौंदर्य उसे शांति प्रदान करता है। दुख और परेशानी के क्षणों में प्रकृति सामान्य रूप से सार्वभौमिक रूप में कठिनाइयों को सरल करती है। जब वह छोटा था तब प्रकृति के प्रति उसका प्रेम विचारहीन भावनायुक्त एवं संवेदनाओं से उत्प्रोत था, किंतु अब जबकि वह पूर्ण व्यक्ति है उसका प्रकृति के प्रति प्रेम आध्यात्मिक हो चुका है। अब वह प्रकृति के समस्त रूपों में नैसर्गिक आध्यात्मिक आनंद प्राप्त करता है। वह प्रकृति को एक माँ अभिभावक तथा एक नैतिक उपदेशकर्ता के रूप में देखता है। कविता की समाप्ति अपनी प्रिय बहन को संबोधित करते हुए समाप्त करता है, उसका सुनहला अभिवादन करता है और उसे राय देता है कि वह प्रकृति के साथ आध्यात्मिक साहचर्य स्थापित करे ताकि वह नैसर्गिक एवं आध्यात्मिक आनंद की अनुभूति कर सके। Now, some description about the poem. In the present poem, Tintern Abbey, the poet William Wordsworth presents a very spiritual description of the natural site of Tintern Abbey. There are mostly three stages of the poem. First, description of the scene, line 1 to 22. The development of the poet's view of the nature, 23 to 113. Address to his sister Dorothy, 114-163. Introduction to the poem. This poem, Tintern Abbey, appeared in the Lyrical Ballads published in 1798. Wordsworth himself writes about it. No poem of mine was composed under circumstances more pleasant for me to remember than this. I began it upon leaving Tintern after crossing the way and concluded it just as I was entering Bristol in the evening. After a ramble of 4 or 5 days with my sister, not a line of it was altered and not any part of it was written down. Till I reached Bristol, the visit to Tintern called forth memories of a previous visit in the summer of 1793 and led Wordsworth to review the change which has affected his attitude to nature in the interval. Apart from its personal historical interest, the poem possesses a special historical value as the first clear statement of the emotional change in poetry of which the Romantic movement was the climax. Tintern Abbey is a great reflective poem. The occasion of the poem was a visit to the way already visited by him 5 years before. The second visit gave rise to the reflection on the significance that landscape had for him in the interval. Wordsworth's attitude to nature in Tintern Abbey. William Wordsworth conceived of nature as a living personality. He believed that there is a divine spirit pervading all objects of nature. This belief finds a complete expression in Tintern Abbey, where he tells us that he has felt the presence of a sublime spirit in the setting sun, the round ocean, the living air, the bulky sky, the mind of man, etc. This spirit, he says, rolls through all things. Emotion and spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thoughts, and rolls through all things. This belief in a divine spirit pervading all the objects of nature is called pantheism. Wordsworth believed that the company of nature gives joy to the human heart. In 1993, he expresses the joy he feels on revisiting a scene of nature. He has gained sweet sensation from this object of nature. In the hours of weariness, nature has a healing influence on the troubled minds. As he tells his sister, above all, Wordsworth emphasized the moral influence of nature. He spiritualized nature and regarded her as a great moral teacher, as the best mother, guardian, and nurse of man, having the elevating influence on man. As he writes, the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul, of all my moral being. He tells his sister Dorothy that nature never betrays the heart that loves her, that nature gives the human beings lofty thoughts. He advises Dorothy to let the moon shine on her and the winds blow on her to put herself under nature's influence. Wordsworth believed in the education of man by nature. In his boyhood, his love for nature was a physical passion. But when he grew up, his love for nature became intellectual and spiritual. Thus, the divine beauty of nature can be seen through the poetry of Tintornabe. The poet Wordsworth has presented it by all his knowledge and skill. No doubt, Tintornabe is an immortal poem in English literature. Critical appreciation of the poem. The poem Tintornabe is a great poem of flawless and noble beauty. The opening lines show Wordsworth's pictorial or descriptive quality. Here, the poet gives a vivid and organic description of the scene visited by him: the water's unripe fruits, the haze rose, the common smoke rising from amongst the trees. He writes, "These waters, rolling from their mountain spring, with a lofty inland murmur, once again do I behold these steep and lofty cliffs that on a wild, secluded scene impress the healing influence of nature." The second part of the poem contains the philosophy of Wordsworth. Whenever the poet was oppressed by the fearful stir and fever of the world, he felt relief by thinking of this scene of nature. Thus, Wordsworth looks upon nature as a healing influence on the troubled mind. Wordsworth's attitude to nature. Here, he deals his attitude to nature and describes his own feeling about it. As a boy, his love for nature was purely sensuous and physical. But as a man, his love for nature is spiritual. He perceives in all nature the existence of a divine spirit and expresses his pantheistic belief. Nature to him is a great moral teacher. Nature is the nurse, the guide, the guardian of his heart and soul, of all his moral beings. Love for Dorothy. In the last part, the feeling of love for nature is combined with a feeling of tenderness for his sister Dorothy. He advises her to submit herself completely to natural influences, because nature has a purifying, ennobling and elevating effect on man and leads him from joy to joy, as he writes. My dear sister, and this prayer I make, knowing that nature never did betray. Effect on readers. The poem is written in a meditative mood and is full of perfectly calm and tranquil joy, and as we go through it, we are greatly moved by its sentiments. We begin to see greater beauty in nature, more grandeur, more majesty, and more profound significance. It is a poem that turns our lazy indifference toward nature into a vital feeling of admiration and awe. Expressive and effective phrases. The poem is marked by Wordsworth's gift of making beauty and highly expressive phrases. Some of the phrases and lines of this poem have become so famous that they are often quoted. For example, we see into the life of things, fretful still, unprofitable, etc. Nature never did betray the heart that loved her. These are some of the best known phrases and lines in the poem. Art, style and diction. The music of the poem is also noteworthy. The sublimity of the words suits the loftiness of the theme. The blank verse of the poem is majestic, and we see here an instance of Wordsworth's grand style. Bernard Groom writes, "Tintinnabe remains a landmark in literature. The word music alone would give it the highest distinction down from the depth of the poet's experience, independent of any literature, model flowing spontaneously and obedient to the demands of a passionate imagination. It places its author among the few great masters of blank verse. The poem is also a manifesto of the height which inspiration from nature might attain. In Tintinnabe, Wordsworth was the spokesman of a new spirit in poetry, a fact fervently recognized by the poets of the next generation." Now, explanation with reference to the context. First stanza of the poem. 5 years have passed, 5 summers with the length of 5 long winters, and again I hear these waters rolling from their mountain springs with a soft inland murmur. Once again do I behold these steep and lofty cliffs that on a wild secluded scene impress thoughts of more deep seclusion and connect the landscape with the quiet of the sky. The days come when I again repose here under his dark sycamore and view these plots of cottage ground, these orchard tufts, which at this season, with their unripe fruits, are clad in one green hue and lose themselves mid groves and copses once again. See, these haze rose, hardly haze rose, little lines of sportive wood run wild, these pastoral forms green to the very door, and wreaths of smoke sent up in silence from among the trees, with some uncertain notice, as might seem, of vagrant dwellers in the houseless woods, or of some hermit's cave, where by his fire the hermit sits alone. Reference. These lines have been taken from the poem Tintinnabe, composed by the great natural poet William Wordsworth. Context. William Wordsworth is a true worshipper of nature. Nature to him is not less than God. Himself, in these particular lines, the poet expresses his personal feelings about a natural site of Tintinnabe. This Tintinnabe is very close to the river at one of the lovely wooded bends of the lovely valley in western England. The poet had visited it first in 1793, but later he visited this hilly district in 1798. 5 years after, when his sister Dorothy was with him, this present poem presents the very vivid and organic picture of Wordsworth's attitude towards nature. Explanation. Here, William Wordsworth says that he visited Tintinnabe first in 1793, and then after 5 years, he is once again at the same place from where he hears the sound of rolling waters from the mountain spring that creates a soft murmur in the background. He once again seeks the steep and lofty cliffs which bring through of solitude on this lonely scene. This quietness of the landscape is connected with the quietness of the deep sky. It seems that the quietness of both have celestial light. As he said before, he again sits under the same sycamore tree to take a rest and becomes very happy to look at the plot of the cottage ground, orchard, tufts, and unripe fruits which are dressed in green color in this season. These trees and groves and fruits give him a lot of joy. The pastoral farms are near the house of the villagers, where from the rolls of smoke are up high in the sky amidst those trees. The quietness of this landscape is against the action of the villagers' houses. This smoke is the silent indication of some human habitation. It is some saint's cave where the saint sits alone by his fire. The whole scene reminds the poet of his early visit. He feels immensely happy in this natural scene. No doubt, Wordsworth is a worshipper of nature, and his love for that is superb. He presents his soul's joy of seeing the lovable and beautiful natural sight of the Internebay. This place to him is very like heaven. Now, the next stanza of the poem. These beauteous forms, through a long absence, have not been to me as is a landscape to as a blind man's eye, but oft in lonely rooms and mid the din of towns and cities, I have owed to them in hours of weariness sensations sweet felt in the blood and felt alone along the heart, and passing even into my purer mind with tranquil restorations, feelings too of unremembered pleasure, such perhaps as have no slight or trivial influence on the best portion of a good man's life, his little nameless unremembered acts of kindness and of love, nor less I trust to them I may have owed another gift of aspect more sublime, that blessed mood in which the burden of the mystery, in which the heavy and the weary weight of all this unintelligible world is lightened, that serene and blessed mood in which the affections gently lead us on until the breath of this corporeal frame and even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul, while with an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his personal feeling about the heavenly natural landscape of Tintern Abbey. It is a place where Wordsworth always gets peace and pleasure and perfectness for mental and hearty enjoyments. Here he deals now, he feels indebted to nature for her soothing influences on his personality. Explanation. Here the poet presents his personal feeling and says that though he was absent from this scene for 5 years, yet he did not forget these beautiful objects and shapes of nature. His attitude to them was not like that of a blind man to scene of nature. A blind man can feel no interest in a landscape, but such was not the case with the poet. Often when the poet used to feel lonely in the midst of the noises and distractions of large city like London, the thoughts of these objects of nature used to drive away his fatigue and give him physical as well as emotional delight, and he got a spiritual delight. In other words, the memory of these objects of nature was a source of physical, mental, and spiritual delight to the poet. The poet further expresses his idea that he has received another and nobler blessing from these objects of nature. The objects of nature have often put him into that joyful mood in which one feels somewhat relieved of the burden which is imposed on the mind by the riddle of the universe. Wordsworth means that the objects of nature have the power to bring that mood upon him in which he no longer feels oppressed down by the riddle of the universe. The mood into which nature can put us in is calm and joyful. In such a mood, we are led wholly by our instincts. We begin to feel that the physical process of our life, like breathing and the circulation of the blood in our body, have temporarily stopped functioning. We become quite forgetful of our body and remember our soul only. In other words, nature puts us into a spiritual mood, and then we escape from this gross and material world and even forget that we have a body. Now, the next stanza of the poem. We but a vain believe, yet, oh, how oft in darkness and amid the many shapes of joyless delight. When the fretful stare, unprofitable, and the fever of the world have hung upon the beatings of my heart, how oft in a spirit have I turned to thee. Oh, sylvan way, thou wanderer through the woods, how often has my spirit turned to thee. Reference will be seen. Context. In these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his deep feeling about the heavenly nature that gives him spiritual pleasure, that also brings in inner peace of mind and soul to us. Explanation. Here, the poet William Wordsworth does not accept that his belief in the natural power of nature is vain and foolish. In support of his convictions, he presents his view in the next few lines. He says that very often in his joyless experiences and gloomy thoughts during the days and nights, he has noticed the worries and anxieties, sick hurry and devoid aims, fever and fits of life in the world. They are so useless and unprofitable and have oppressed the spirit and soul of the poet. In such moments of dreary accents, the poet has returned to the sprightly river for comfort and encouragement. This is the river that wanders through the woods in a zigzag manner and pleases the eye. The poet has very often turned to this lovely river to justify his beliefs that nature is soothing and pleasant to refresh you and encourage you for the whole life. Now, the next stanza of the poem. And now, with gleams of half-extinguished thought, with many recognitions and dim and faint and somewhat of a sad perplexity, the picture of the mind revives again, while here I stand not only with sense of present pleasure but with pleasing thoughts that in this moment there is a life and food for future years, and so I dare to hope, though changed no doubt from what I was when first I came among these hills where like a robe I wander over the mountains by the sides of the deep rivers and the lonely streams. Wherever nature led, more like a man, flying more something that he dreads than one who sought the thing he loved for nature then, the cruiser pleasure of my boys' days and their glad animal moment all gone by. To me was all in all, I cannot paint what then I was. The sounding cataract haunted me like a passion. The tall rock, the mountain and the deep and gloomy wood, their colors and their forms were then to me an appetite, a feeling and a love that had no need of a remoter charm, by thought supplied, nor any interest unborrowed from the eye. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about Tintern Abbey, from which he has taken great pleasure from its natural site. According to him, whatever he feels today, he has already received a great pleasure in his first visit during 1793. Here he describes the first visit to Tintern Abbey. Explanation: here the poet describes his first visit, which he has made in 1793, but his memory is not very clear to him. He ponders about that, and when he feels and finds some signs of remembrance of his first visit, he becomes very happy. But by and by, the whole pictures become very clear to the poet. He feels at the moment that he is not only enjoying the pleasure temporarily, but rather it will also be a source of great happiness and joy for years to come. Wordsworth expresses his full confidence. He hopes that it is bound to happen what he contemplates. He feels that undoubtedly his attitude towards nature has undergone a change. He further says that when he came first to the hill in 1793, he had youthful pleasures like running, leaping, roaming, wrestling, etc. Like a rose, he leapt over the mountains and ran along the banks of the deep rivers and lovely streams. He wandered about wherever nature led him. His attitude at that time was that of a man who came to nature as her worshipper and devotee. It was all due to the fact that by that time he had developed as a young boy, whose ideas were to be shaped later on. To him, nature was everything at the first stage. The loud sound was like a strong desire, full of emotions. The objects of nature, like the tall rock, the mountain, the deepest and dense wood, and their beautiful shape and colors, were the ideal things for the poet to crave for. It was such an intensity of love and feeling in this atmosphere that needed not ulterior charm of creative imagination and mental contemplation for any other sort of joy and pleasure. There was no need for the poet to create his own beauty by his physical observation. He enjoyed himself at that moment to the maximum limit of joy in these surroundings. Now, the next stanza of the poem. That time is past, and all its aching joys are now no more, and all its dizzy raptures, nor for this faint I nor mourn, nor murmur, often gifts have followed for such loss. I would believe abundant recompense, for I have learned to look on nature not as in the hour of thoughtless youth, but hearing oftentimes the still sad music of humanity, nor hoarse nor grating, though of ample power, to chasten and subdue, and I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky, and in the mind of man a motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rules through all things. Therefore am I still a lover of the meadows and the woods and mountains and of all that we behold from this green earth, of all the mighty world of eye and ear both, what they have create and what perceive, well pleased to recognize in nature and the language of the sense, the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul, of all my moral being. A reference will be same context. In these particular lines, the poet Wordsworth expresses his idea about his personal attitude towards the nature. According to him, in his first visit to Tintern Abbey in 1793, the pleasure he received was mere bodily pleasure. But then, at that time, he heard the sad music of humanity throughout nature. Explanation. Here, the poet presents the evolution of his mind towards the nature. This time he feels something more than he felt the previous time. In the beginning, his love to the nature was physical, sensuous, and passionate. As the time passes, his idea towards nature also present some new outlook to him. Now he is a perfect man. The imagery is at once more lovely and wonderful. The poet says that it is this mysterious and powerful force of nature which gives motion to all human beings. All objects are related to serious and philosophical thoughts. The poet has become transcendental and develops his pantheistic theory in relation to his deity, nature. He further says that he still loves all the natural sights which are beautiful and worthy of sight in the world. The poet wants to appreciate beauty, which is partly created by our imagination and partly objective with the sense of hearing and sight. He is pleased to recognize in nature the picture drawn by our senses of sight, hearing, the imagination. Finally, the poet accepts the nature as the center of his beauty and pleasure. To him, she is the nurse, guide, and the guardian patroness of his heart, soul, and all his mortal being. She is everything to him. His moral character and conduct depends on her. Wordsworth here presents himself as a great philosopher who gains substance from the mysterious power of nature. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Nor perchance, if I were not thus taught, should I the more suffer my genial spirits to decay. For thou art with me here upon the banks of the fair river, though my dearest friend, my dear, dear friend, and in the voice I catch the language of my former heart, and read my former pleasures in the shooting lights of the wild eyes. Oh, yet a little while may I behold in thee what I was once, my dear, dear sister, and this prayer I make, knowing that nature never did betray the heart that loved her. 'Tis her privilege through all the years of this our life to lead from joy to joy, for she can so inform the mind that is within us, so impressed with quietness and beauty, and so fed with lofty thoughts that neither evil tongues Russ's judgment nor the sneers of selfish men, nor greetings where no kindness is, nor all the dreary intercourse of daily life shall ever prevail against us or disturb our cheerful faith, that all which is we behold is full of blessings. Therefore, let me let the moon shine of thee in the solitary walks. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about his personal evolution of ideas of nature, and also expresses how his sister Dorothy proves to be a boon in the midst of natural sights. Explanation: here, the poet Wordsworth deals that he does not want to lose the love of nature at any cost, and he cannot lose his natural cheerfulness. Kindly feelings to decline and decay, for he is blessed with the company of his dear sister Dorothy on the bank of the beautiful river Wye. He pleads for the reason that in voice he feels the echoes of the pleasant feeling of his first visit to Tintern Abbey. It is because when he came first time, his sister was not with him. Now his sister is with him. The beauty of the nature he saw for the first time he cannot lose. So he wants to make a prayer that she should remain gifted with these qualities of natural cheerfulness. For he believes that nature does not betray one that loves her heartily. Nature has an ennobling, uplifting, and elevating influence on the minds of human beings. Nature can so mold and strengthen our minds that no kind of evil can disturb or distress us or upset our mental equilibrium. People talking ill of us or forming hasty and ill-considered opinions about us or casting scornful looks at us or making a merrily outward show of good will towards us cannot shake our optimism. On the contrary, all that we see will appear blessed. Thus, nature is a great benefactor for us. Now, the last stanza of the poem. And let the mystery mountain winds be free to blow against thee, and in after years, when these wild ecstasies shall be matured into a sober pleasure, when thy mind shall be a mansion for all lovely forms, the memory be as a dwelling place for all sweet sounds and harmonies, oh then, if solitude or fear or pain or grief should be the portion, with what healing thoughts of tender joy wilt thou remember me, and these my exhortations, nor perchance, if I should be where I no more can hear thy voice, nor catch from the wild eyes these gleams of past existence, wilt thou then forget that on the banks of this delightful stream we stood together, and that I, so long a worshipper of nature, hither came unweird in that service, rather say with warmer love, oh, with far deeper joy of holier love, nor wilt thou then forget that after many wanderings, many years of absence, these steep woods and lofty cliffs and this green pastoral landscape were to me more dear, both for themselves and for their sake. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about his own personal feeling toward nature. To him, nature is very like Almighty God, so it should be accepted by joy and happiness. Here, he advises his sister Dorothy that he should keep all respect towards nature. Explanation: here, the poet asks her sister Dorothy to submit herself completely to nature's influences, let the moon breeze flow freely against her face. Now in her youth, she can experience dizzy due to her pleasure in nature. She will become calm and thoughtful. Her mind and memory will then serve as the storehouse of all the beautiful objects and sweet sounds of nature which she is now enjoying. If then in her old age luck turns against her and she has to suffer some kind of unhappiness, the memory of nature will comfort and soothe her and she will feel tender and graceful towards her brother for advising her to develop an intimacy with nature. He further says to her sister that if she is separated from him and if he cannot hear her voice and look into her wild eyes, which reminds him of his own past youth, she will still remember how she longed with her brother once stood on the bank of this beautiful river. Where he adds that he has all his life been a devotee of nature. His love for nature, he says, is now even warmer than before. His eagerness for nature is now deeper and of a more spiritual kind. The poet asks her sister not to forget that even though he has visited this spot after an absence of several years and after much journeying to and from this scene among the hilly woods, tall mountains and green verdure, yet it is clear to him not only because the scene is itself so beautiful, but also because he is visiting it in the company of his sister. In other words, the presence of his sister at this spot makes it still more dear to him. This is the end of first poem, Tintern Abbey. Now we are going to record the next poem of the William Wordsworth, 3 Years She Grew. First of all, summary of the poem. In the poem 3 Years She Grew, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about nature. This poem is also called The Education of Nature. Here, nature wants to educate Lucy. Nature has her own scheme for educating Lucy. The pattern of the education of nature is different from the artificial type of education in the town or cities. Nature wants to become the sole guardian of Lucy. Under the guidance of nature, Lucy will be free. She will roam freely. She will enjoy the views of the forest, mountains, and fountains. She will feel the presence of the divine power in all she will see. She will experience the vital feelings of delight in the lap of nature. Thus, roaming and wandering in the lap of nature, Lucy will be greatly influenced by the good aspects of nature. The storms and clouds will mold her life. The type of education will enable Lucy to grow up into her full stature. She will learn the lessons of sympathy to life from nature. Finally, the poet says that she will derive inspiration from the stars in the sky. She will enjoy the murmuring sound of the fountain. Thus, in the atmosphere of the perfect joy and delight, Lucy will grow into a perfect lady. Alas, she lives a short life with nature. Nature can educate her for a short period, but she dies forever. The poet feels grief that she is no more and that he will not be able to see her anymore. Hindi Sarans. प्रस्तुत कविता 3 Years She Grew, 3 वर्ष वह विकसित हुई के अंतर्गत कवि विलियम वर्ड्सवर्थ प्रकृति की महत्ता का वर्णन करता है। कविता को प्रकृति की शिक्षा भी कहा जाता है। यहाँ प्रकृति स्वयं लूसी को शिक्षा प्रदान करना चाहती है। प्रकृति की अपनी स्वयं की योजना है लूसी को शिक्षा प्रदान करने की। प्रकृति की शिक्षा देने की व्यवस्था कृत्रिम शिक्षा से भिन्न है, जैसा कि कस्बों एवं नगरों में होती है। प्रकृति लूसी की पूर्ण अभिभावक बनना चाहती है। प्रकृति के संरक्षण एवं निर्देशन में लूसी पूर्णतया स्वतंत्र होगी। वह स्वतंत्र होकर घूम सकती है। वह जंगल के दृश्यों, पहाड़ों एवं फव्वारों, स्रोतों और झरनों को देख सकेगी। वह सदा ईश्वरीय शक्ति का अनुभव करेगी। जो कुछ वह देखेगी उनमें सजीव आनंद की अनुभूति करेगी प्रकृति की गोद में घूमने और टहलने से उसका प्राकृतिक विकास होगा और वह प्रकृति की अच्छी वस्तुओं का ज्ञान प्राप्त कर सकेगी। तूफान और बादल उसके जीवन का निर्माण करेंगे। इस प्रकार की प्राकृतिक शिक्षा लूसी के स्तर को विकसित करेगी। वह सहानुभूति की शिक्षा पवित्र प्रकृति से प्राप्त करेगी। कवि अंत में कहता है कि वह आकाश के तारों से प्रेरणा प्राप्त करेगी और फव्वारों के और झरनों की आवाज से उसे आनंद प्राप्त होगा। इस प्रकार प्रकृति के पूर्ण आनंद में लूसी एक पूर्ण महिला का रूप धारण करेगी। यह दुख की बात है कि लूसी का जीवन कितना छोटा रहा। प्रकृति उसे कुछ ही समय तक शिक्षा प्रदान कर सकी, वह सदा के लिए मर जाती है। कवि को आत्मिक सुख होता है कि लूसी अब कभी नहीं दिखाई पड़ेगी। Now, the theme, thought, and the philosophy of the poem. This particular poem, 3 years She Grew, was written in Germany in 1799 and was published in 1800. It is one of the famous Lucy poems of Wordsworth. This poem fully depends on the philosophy of Rousseau, who warns that a child should be brought up in the surroundings of nature. This poem is also entitled The Education of Nature. The philosophy of Wordsworth's nature in the poem. The beautiful poem, 3 years She Grew, contains a vital part of Wordsworth's nature philosophy. It expresses his belief that nature has the power to form, mold and shape the character and personality of man. And so, she is the best nurse, guardian and the mother of man. Nature declared her resolve to bring up Lucy, and nature carried out her intention. Nature said that under her watchful influence, Lucy would not only develop into an attractive and graceful figure, but also develop a moral sense and the capacity of differentiating between right and wrong. The pictorial quality of the poem. The poem contains a number of beautiful and sensuous pictures. The sportive fawn leaping gleefully, the stately and floating clouds, the stars of the midnight, rivetes dancing their way, are all brought before our eyes. All these and other objects and forces of nature contribute to the physical and moral development of Lucy. The most exquisite and delightful picture, however, is contained in the following lines. And vital feeling of delight shall rear her form to stately height, her virgin bosom swell. The pathos in the poem. The poem closes on an poignant note of sadness. A shock awaits, as in the final stanza. The premature death of Lucy is the most tragic event. The poet feels desolate to think of her death. The variations of tragedy is contained in the following lines. She died and left to me this death, this calm and quiet scene, the memory of what has been and never more will be. The style and diction and lyricism of the poem. The style of the poem is fully lyrical. It is also descriptive and deductive. The poem comes straight from the poet's heart and conveys an impression of intensity through simplicity. The diction is very also simple according to the principle of Wordsworth. The words used are very simple and yet they create a powerful effect. So the poem is no doubt an immortal poem in English literature. Now, the explanation of the stanza with reference to the context. First stanza of the poem. Three 3 years he grew in sun and sour. The nature said a lovelier flower on earth was never sown. This child I to myself will take. She shall be mine, and I will make a lady of my own. Reference: this particular stanza has been taken from the poem 3 years he grew, composed by one of the greatest worshipper of the nature, William Wordsworth. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about a lovely child, Lucy. According to him, the little child of only 3 years has been brought up by nature herself. Explanation: here, the greatest poet of nature, William Wordsworth, tells the story of a girl child, Lucy. According to him, the little child of 3 years grew up in the normal course, witnessing the usual change of weather in the summer and in the winter in the rain. When Lucy was merely 3 years old, nature herself declared her purpose. Nature said that Lucy was the loveliest child ever born on earth. For this reason, nature decided to bring up Lucy under her own supervision. Nature wanted to become a guardian of Lucy and to bring up Lucy in accordance with her own idea. Nature wants that Lucy should grow up into a perfect woman. Myself will to my darling be both law and impulse, and with me the girl in rock and plain, in earth and heaven, in glade and bower, shall feel an overseeing power to kindle or restrain. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Wordsworth expresses his idea about a child whose name is Lucy and she is merely 3 years old. According to the poet, it is nature herself who wants to support the child to be developed in the due course of time. Here, the poet gives a right plan how nature will develop her. Explanation: here, in these lines, nature herself declares that she is ready to preserve Lucy under her guidance. She will provoke her to be developed. She is ready to save her from going on a wrong path. She will also teach her how to lead her life in the right manner. She will teach her how to make distinction between right and wrong. Lucy will live in the company of the earth, the sky and the rocks, the valleys, the open place, and of the woods. Thus, Lucy will be aware of the spirit of nature. She will prove all helpful to Lucy. She will teach her how to perform right action in the years to come. Thus, nature will be all helpful to her. Now, the next stanza of the poem. She shall be sportive as the fawn that whirled with glee across the lawn or up the mountain springs, and hers shall be the breathing balm, and hers the silence and the calm of mute intense things. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about the little child Lucy. According to him, Lucy has been brought up by nature herself, and she will get all divine pleasure in the environment of natural sights. Explanation: here, the poet describes how Lucy plays in the surroundings of divine nature. To him, Lucy leaps here and there as a fawn and takes interest in the lawn and on the mountain. Seeing how a deer plays, Lucy also learns how to leap and how to play, and she feels free and active. At the same time, Lucy is very silent, like the planets, trees and flowers. These objects in nature remain ever silent, and they breathe out a sweet fragrance of nature. Lucy will enjoy the sweet fragrance and the peaceful atmosphere. In fact, their sweet fragrance and peaceful quality will become part and parcel of Lucy's own personality and temperament. Thus, in the poem, the poet reveals a very vivid and organic picture of natural sights. Now, another stanza of the poem. The floating clouds their state shall lend to her, for her the willow bend, nor shall the field to see, even in the motions of the storm, grace that shall mould the maiden's form by silent sympathy. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about the capability and ability of the nature. According to him, nature is all-powerful. She can change the age and phase of human beings. She can teach the morality and the way of the gravity to all human beings. Explanation: nature wants to bring up Lucy according to her manner. She wants to become the guardian of Lucy. Let Lucy be the greatest and most graceful figure in the world by living with the nature. The clouds floating in the sky look splendid and majestic. The willow tree is elastic. There is a certain grace in the motion of the storm which sings according to a rhyme of its own. Living in the surroundings of nature, Lucy will develop in her essential characteristics of those objects or forces. From clouds, she will learn how to walk. From willow tree, she will derive certain elasticity and suppleness of limbs. From the motion of the storm, she will learn a certain grace, and certain rhymes will pass into her figure. Nature will ensure the proper physical development of Lucy. Now, the next stanza of the poem. The stars of midnight shall be dear to her, and she shall lean her ear in many a secret place where rivulets dance their wayward round and pass into her face. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about the nature. According to him, nature has all power to bring new revolutions in human beings. She can develop all human character in man. She can also develop morality in man and can lend her own grace and charm to the body of a human being. Explanation: here the poet says how nature will supply her power and her sound to Lucy. Lucy will see the beauty of the stars during the night. She will listen to the sound of the water rhythmically flowing. The surroundings of nature will prove very useful to Lucy. The beauty of the stars will also help her to make her the most beautiful girl. The murmuring musical sound of the river also will charm her. Thus, the beauty of all nature will help Lucy to become a mature lady. Now, the next stanza of the poem. A vital feelings of delight shall rear her form to stately height, her virgin bosom swell. Such thoughts to Lucy I will give, while she and I together live here in the happy dell. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about Lucy, who is living in the environment of full natural sight. According to him, nature herself is ready to prepare Lucy in full form so that she may become the most beautiful lady in the world. Explanation: here, the poet says the nature herself declares that she will prepare Lucy to full development with her strength and vigor. With all happiness, she will grow in a fully perfect woman and will look all dignified and majestic. Her breast will develop in due course of time. Thus, Lucy will develop to physical maturity under the various natural influences. Nature will ensure the proper physical development of Lucy. She will also help to develop her mind too. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Thus nature spake, the work has done. How soon my Lucy's race was run. She died and loved to me. This Heath, this calm and quiet scene, the memory of what has been and never more will be. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet William Wordsworth expresses his idea about nature and Lucy. According to the poet, nature wants to bring up Lucy as a perfect lady, but Lucy dies and her wishes comes to an end. Explanation: here the poet wants to say that nature herself has decided to bring up Lucy as the most perfect lady on the earth, but unfortunately she dies. The poet is greatly touched by this loss. His heart is broken. The heat, the quietness and all beautiful scenes have turned into a desert to him. He becomes very sad and thinks that the beauty he has seen will not be seen anymore. The loss of Lucy is no doubt very pathetic. The poet feels that the hopes has gone, the beautiful and lovely Lucy has gone forever and ever. The dream of perfect lady has been fully shattered. The poet, the worshipper of nature, will not see the perfect lady which would have been brought up by the nature herself. Thank you. This is the end of poem.